Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode number 48. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, this Victory Monday for the Pittsburgh Steelers as they held on to beat the Green Bay Packers 23-19 on Sunday to move Pittsburgh to 6-3 on the season. And Dave, we talk about, can this team sustain? I don't like the way that they're winning. They're sacrificing one inside linebacker per win the last 2 weeks, which I don't know is a model that can continue, but that is certainly one of the top stories. But above all else, another win for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, the unsustainable remains sustainable, and it all boils down to wins, and they got another one. It's like watching a movie over and over again, but each time that you watch it, somebody has changed little bits and pieces of the movie and it gets a little better. They remove some of those, you know, like when the car goes over the railroad tracks and it loses the hubcap, but in the next scene you see the hubcap still on the car, you know, because mm-hmm. they didn't edit that right or whatnot. And it kind of feels like that. It feels like, you know, we're talking, you know, you for all those times we talk about Antonio Brown, like week after week, and he make all these great plays and you just run out of different ways to describe kind of the end result. That's kind of what it feels like this. But look, you know, it's so hard to win games in the NFL, right? I mean, how many teams would kill to be 6-3 right now, no matter how they got there? And you know, the Steelers are there 6-3. And, you know, at this point, all they have to do is, you know, win really win three more games and they'll be over 500 yet again. And obviously, when you look at the schedule right now, way this thing lays out, you would think, you know, this team can at least reach 10 wins at this point. And if they do that, you have to think they're in, you know, going to get into playoffs, you know, some way. Look, I mean, even the division, even the AFC North is still up for grabs at this point. You know, Baltimore mm-hmm. lost yesterday. There's a lot of football left to be played at this point. But, yeah, they got another win, and now we're here to talk about it.
And we're going to spend today's podcast focusing on the Packers game and everything that came out of that. But just a quick peek ahead, Sunday's game against the Browns, Dave, talk about a big one. I mean, 2-6-3 teams, great defenses. That's going to be a really, really critical matchup.
Yeah, they've really got a good defense for sure. Now they gave up a little bit, I think, to the Ravens yesterday, you know, look, it's an exciting week overall when you look at the AFC North, because you got the Steelers playing the Browns and you have the Ravens playing the Bengals. So going to be interesting week 11 in the NFL.
All right, Dave, where to begin with this one? You want to go over just quickly inactives, your take on that, Darius Rush being named inactive, which really ended up being no surprise because the team elevated on Saturday, linebacker Tariq Carpenter and Trenton Thompson getting elevated. That was maybe an interesting decision overall. Actually ended up seeing snaps late in that game with all the injuries this team sustained. But just a quick note on the inactives, that Rush, after playing 30 snaps against Tennessee, was down, did not dress against Green Bay.
Yeah, not surprising. The the question there, and that became that became a little bit more obvious once you saw the two elevations made there. And look, you know, I realize people are upset that he wasn't active after playing 30 snaps against the Titans, but he didn't play any special team snaps in that game. And when you look at you have two backup inside linebackers, one safety, one backup inside linebacker, elevated, and both those guys, you know, have special teams experience. And the fact that they really dressed one extra cornerback for that game against the Titans there, and they had to have seven inactives in this game because of the two elevations, that became less surprising right after those elevations were made. Obviously, two of those guys inactive were Minka and Montrevious Adams because of injuries. Mason Rudolph's a weekly inactive, the emergency third quarterback. Dylan Cook, Braden Fajoco hasn't dressed in weeks there. And who was the
Dylan
other
Cook.
One? Yeah, Dylan Cook was inactive there. Oh, and
Iquadike, right? For McFarland up.
Right. And that wasn't a surprise there. So, I know people don't like it and trying to understand it, but remember, this team had to have seven inactives for this game. And I think the special teams aspect of it is what forced Darius Rush back to the inactive list.
Although Thompson only played two special team snaps. And so I wonder what the exact reason for that was, just quality of practice work. I'm not entirely sure. Rush was considered a strong special teamer coming out of South Carolina to a loss and just praising for it. Not that we're losing sleep or going to spend any more time than necessary on Darius Rush for all the other things in this game, but just a quick note as we usually do to talk about the pregame inactives.
Right.
All right, injury standpoint, that's going to be a longer discussion, Dave, and it unfortunately starts with linebacker Quan Alexander. Reportedly, and I'm sure we made official by the team here shortly, a torn Achilles in the first quarter for Quan Alexander. It looked like, and I have not gotten a great view of it, I think he tried to cut to his right as he was covering the receiver, and I'm guessing that's when his leg gave out. And as you pointed out, that would be the second torn Achilles of his career. Also happened in 2020 as a member of the New Orleans Saints. And so lose Cole Holcomb in week 9 for the season due to a knee injury. And now in week 10, it very much appears Quan Alexander is done for the year with a torn Achilles.
Yeah, we're not going to get a good look at that until the All 22 is released. But and you're right. I think it happened in the end zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
On a cut there, you can barely pick it up on the TV tape there before it cuts another angle there. Second one for him. And I believe the last time it was the right leg, looking back at some pictures and all like that of him being carted off when he was with the Saints. I think that happened on a Christmas Day, did it not? Against the or as a member of the Saints back in, what was it, 2020? And I think this one is the left one. So man, to have it's hard enough to come back from an Achilles injury as it is, but to have what seems like having to come back from two separate ones to each leg, you have to wonder about that. This is a guy that signed a 1-year contract with the Steelers, obviously scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent after the year. At this point, it's hard to imagine him being fully rehabbed by this thing by the time March rolls around there. So I don't know if we've seen the last of him in a Steelers uniform, but it wouldn't be surprising on top of this injury at this point. But man, you know, the Steelers, you go from a position that looked pretty deep overall here just a couple of weeks ago, and now they're going to have to get some backups in there to help fill out the rest of this roster and carry at least four of these guys on game day.
Yeah, it's like backups to the backups is where the depth is being tested. Yeah, Pittsburgh, just 2 weeks ago, they were really happy and loved their 3-man rotation of Holcomb, Alexander, Roberts, each of those guys kind of having a different skill set. You know, Alexander, think good in coverage. Holcomb kind of a well-rounded type of dude. Roberts, the hammer, the downhill base package type of player. And you trust those guys from a communication standpoint. Holcomb was your green dot dude. Alexander now had that, and now it goes to a Landon Roberts. So Do you want to take kind of the carve out about how to address inside linebacker, or do you want to come back to that after we talk about the game some more? Your choice here, Dave.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and talk about it and get it knocked out here. I mean, it's not, obviously not a great situation for this team to be in. And, you know, I looked around at some of the practice squads across the NFL, and, you know, it's not a lot really to choose from when it comes to that aspect of it. And it feels like this team's probably going to have to work with options already on the roster here. And they did elevate Tariq Carpenter. And that guy, you know, he's a converted safety to linebacker. And then your only other option really is Mikel Walker. You know, a guy that's been on the practice squad, what, a couple of weeks now, I think, now at this point. So that seems like your two likeliest options. Tariq Carpenter obviously was elevated to the practice squad for this game. That will, you know, he'll go back to the practice squad this week, and then he might just turn around real quick and be back on the 53. And they can obviously carve out another roster spot with Godwin Igwebukwe now, and probably let him go to make room. But, you know, unless there's somebody on the street that we're missing at this point, you know, not a lot of options to come in there, especially because of the type that you're looking for, right? You're looking for one really more, you know, the athleticism that can maybe help you in a coverage aspect of this, because Landon Roberts can obviously play downhill, and really Mark Robinson, that's his specialty as well too. Not so much in coverage there. So now in the post that you wrote either last night or early this morning, I think an interesting thing to maybe consider here might be Keanu Neal, right? Because he has played, you know, off the ball linebacker in the NFL. So he does have experience in that. Obviously, he's been around this team for a bit now. So you might have to, you know, stitch this thing together situationally overall. But I think you can make a, especially when Mika comes back here, which hopefully is very soon, I think you can make an argument to having Keanu Neal down there at inside linebacker.
I think it's one of the better options of a bad situation. And in the article I wrote this morning, you guys can check out, there are no good or easy or seamless solutions when it's mid-November and you just lost your top two linebackers, especially your top two coverage linebackers. And I like what Roberts has done. I like Mark Robinson, but as you said, they are downhill, attack the run type of dudes. They are not go backwards and cover kind of players. You saw, you know, Roberts struggle against Luke Musgrave for a 30-yard completion yesterday. Teams are going to attack the heck out of that if they see those guys on the field in passing situations. So what do? It could be a Carpenter, but he lacks experience, a second-year guy with all of 16 career defensive snaps, none with Pittsburgh, but he is a good athlete in a line, and there's something maybe attractive there. Walker has experience and played a bunch last year for Atlanta, so there are at least some experience there, although he's new to Pittsburgh. But as you said, Neil, he was a true kind of linebacker in Dallas in 2020. It's better whenever he's near the line of scrimmage and maybe can blitz more and take on some of these backs or tight ends. That might be a bit better for him overall, as opposed to playing in some of the space that he's in right now. Is it perfect? No, but that's probably something you have to explore and at least check out and consider, especially, as you said, once Mika Fitzpatrick gets healthy.
Yeah, it would really be nice if you knew for a fact going into this game that Mika was going to be back, but you don't know that, you know, and, you know, you're going to obviously get him back sooner rather than later. It'd be a lot easier if you have him there. And then obviously you would have, who's your other safety?
Casey.
Yeah. Casey and Mika, as your safeties, and then could you know, allow Neal to play more in the box there in the linebacker situation. But and once again, you know, I don't know who's out there on the street that can come in and just help you, especially from a coverage standpoint like that. It probably would be a little bit easier if you were looking for more of a downhill guy. Who was the other linebacker they had in camp?
Nick Kwiatkowski and Tanner Muse. I think Muse is still on the Chargers roster.
Yeah. So neither one of those guys are probably going to be an option at this point. So, it's probably your options are probably going to be within is the way this thing's going to boil out, you know.
I'm sure they're going to bring somebody from the outside, be it a practice squad. There'll be something that gets it added, but, you know, will they actually help and how quickly can that help come? You get somebody off a practice squad, do you really trust them to pick things up right away, especially on those weighty downs? And if you do take Roberts off the field, who's your communicator? Who's wearing the green dot? Who's going to, you know, kind of be that hub of communication? Maybe it'll be Minka in those moments whenever he returns, but I'm not sure when Minka's going to come back either. I think they're going to really take their time with his hamstring injury. They don't want to risk, you know, Fitzpatrick kind of going the Freiermuth path to coming back and hurting himself again and being out, you know, even longer. So I think they're going to really kind of take their time and make sure they're not doing anything that's going to jeopardize Minka Fitzpatrick. But yeah, there really is no easy situation right now. But I think they're going to have to try to do something and probably some trial and error. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be ideal, but that's what happens when you lose Holcomb and Alexander in back-to-back weeks.
I know everybody's saying, boy, you guys sure are down on Mark Robinson. But, I mean, he just, you know, there's not enough there to have confidence in the coverage aspect of it.
Yeah, I like Robinson. I'm excited for him. I thought, you know, he had a really good camp as a rookie and made some plays his rookie season overall. And there's a great opportunity for him to play. And he's going to play a lot in base and nickel. I'm not saying that you're going to, you know, put Keanu Neal in your base 3-4 defense down at linebacker. That's not going to happen. But you do have to address the coverage aspect of things and the weakness for Roberts and for Robinson is trying to move out in space. Now, is Robinson maybe a little bit better than Roberts in coverage? Yeah, probably a little bit younger, fresher legs, but you like Roberts for the communication aspect. And to a larger discussion, you're really seeing some communication issues with his defense. You just see a lot of pre-snap chaos. The guy's unsure where to line up. And that's all because when you lose Holcomb and Alexander and Fitzpatrick, that's going to create those things, especially as you're dealing with it on the fly. So those things hopefully can get cleaned up, but you're seeing a lot of just, I think, chaos pre-snap right now. So the first goal is to communicate well, because if you're not communicating well, doesn't matter what athletes you have out there, it's going to be a tough game for you. So there's a lot of layers to this discussion this team's going to have to address.
Right. They've got to have confidence, you know, especially if they're going to give a green dot to someone other than Landon Roberts there, you know, when he's off the field there. And there were some communication lapses, obviously, yesterday in this game against the Packers.
Yeah, so we'll probably continue to talk about the inside linebacker situation, but that's kind of the view of things right now. They can still stop the run, but third down, dime packages, end of half, end of game. How do they address that? Something to watch for going forward. All right, Dave, for this game, let's go to the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. Got off to a really great start. You thought, okay, could this be the game? 30 points, 400 yards. That felt like possibilities after the first quarter. And the third quarter just became the due first quarter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was, you know, a really strong start, tailed off from there. But the run game on track, really strong outing, 205 after 166 against Tennessee. So clearly Pittsburgh won this game offensively, at least because of that running game.
Yeah, boy, and how good was that to see in this thing? And on the heels of Broderick Jones saying, "I 200 should be our goal there." Yeah, let that guy set the goals every week. Look, they came out and they really were running the ball, especially early in this game, and especially on that right side for sure. You know, Broderick, I thought James Daniels had a great first quarter on into the second quarter there. Mason Cole, you seeing him, I thought overall he played a pretty good game in the run game, get to the second level in there. You saw some of these dart, you know, concepts with Broderick coming across and blocking. You saw some more pulling in this game. I think the most notable thing is on a lot of these runs, especially in the first half of this game, there wasn't really contact being made on these running backs until they were good, you know, a couple yards past the line. Heck, there was a couple of holes in there. I think I could have got a yard or two with this offense. And now, you know, that's a couple of weeks in a row. Obviously, Broderick Jones, second start at right tackle. That's going swimmingly well at this point. But, you know, the overarching thought here is they've got that traction now in the run game. Back-to-back games here is the kind of thing that you would expect moving forward, and it takes a lot of onus off the passing game overall. at this point, and really those first couple of drives, you know, the reason they were able to go down and score was because they were able to run the football. Heck, they had, 100 net yards rushing in the first half. And then as this thing obviously played out, Jalen Warren had, you know, his first 100-yard game for him, for so good for him. Both of the running backs really ran hard overall. A couple of explosive runs in this game, which is always like to say that's stealing when you can get that. So, and look, you're going to have to run the ball the further you get into winter, right? Especially with this offense, and they have picked a good time, almost like last season, right? That running game came alive
around the exact same time too, right? Like week 9, week 10 kind of range,
right? So you're going to need that moving forward here, and it's a great time to get that thing on track overall. And just, you know, once again, I think one of the biggest things that stuck out was, you know, these running backs are getting, you know, 2-3 yards past the line of scrimmage before any contact's being made, and they're both running very, very hard after contact. So that certainly is good to see.
It's exciting. It's needed. It's required for a passing offense that's clearly going to be below average, probably at best, throughout the rest of the season. So to run for, have that kind of productivity to, you know, get the game started, to, I would say, you know, give yourself third and short, but they really were poor on third down in this game. So it's weird to run for 205 and be that bad on third down as Pittsburgh was in this game. But besides that, yeah, the line, I think, is doing a great job up front. The names you mentioned, Cole Daniels, and Osei Malu, moved that dude on that one run that I think Warren had left side, and Broderick Jones, you know, pulling, and you know, you put Jones in at right tackle your last two games and are having really tremendously strong rushing outputs. Probably not a coincidence there, but you know, over the last 2 weeks, they, Pittsburgh, second in the NFL with 371 yards rushing. That's only behind Baltimore. 5.6 yards per attempt is third in the NFL, behind the Lions and the Ravens, and 3 rushing touchdowns is tied for second in the NFL too. So it's taken too long the last two seasons to get this run game going, but this is what Pittsburgh wanted to be. They wanted to be physical up front, you know, win at the first level. The zone track was better. There weren't the negative plays in this game that there were early in the season. And so to have Warren, to have Harris, to rotate those guys, they were really even in terms of carries and probably snap count and those types of things. It's a really good 1-2 punch right now.
Yeah, look, you're seeing a lot of, especially in that game yesterday, some benefits of Allen Robinson. You know, not that he, sometimes all you got to do is just get a piece of somebody. You know, especially when you're talking about those wide receivers on the edge. And I thought there were 2 or 3 runs in that game where not dominating blocks by Allen Robinson, but just enough that it ends up getting 6, 7, 8 or even, you know, an explosive run in there. So you're starting to see some of the dividends of the blocking aspect when it comes to Allen Robinson.
Which is good, because the passing game returns have not really been there for anybody not named Deontay Johnson and George Pickens over the last 4 or 5 weeks. And even Johnson and Pickens, of course, pretty quiet. The whole passing game was not doing much, not asked to do much yesterday, which is probably the best thing you can say is don't ask this passing game to do a whole lot. Let this running game be the part that speaks the loudest for this offense. And it has. So Jalen Warren, first 100-yard rushing game in the NFL. Kudos to him. You just wish you could grind out this clock a little bit better the last, you know, 2 games. The offense has been unable to close things out. They've had to have the defense make literal last play stops. But overall, you know, this run game was huge. The first 2 drives were excellent. You know, see Pittsburgh go back to back like that. Harris and Warren, you really felt like the line was setting the tone early in this game.
Yeah, saw a couple of screens actually kind of work in this one as well too, right?
Don't go telling anybody now. This team might be able to run a couple of them. So, yeah, I mean, it's all, you know, kind of working together. And again, you want to hopefully see play action open up off of that. Not that you need to have a great running game to do that, but it certainly does not help, or does not hurt, I should say. So, yeah, the energy that Warren brings, the power that Harris has, those guys being able to rotate, stay fresh is critical.
Third downs, you know, they were okay in the first half, but in the second half, what were they, 1 of 6 or 1 of 7? And the one that they did convert was the Kenny Pickett scramble there. Now, they weren't, quite a few of these weren't very manageable type situations, and that obviously hurt. And then you had the one third down that they converted to Pickens, one of the only ones over the middle of the field that looked like it was going to potentially ice the game at the time there. That gets called back on offensive pass interference on Calvin Austin III. And I don't know what you thought about that, but that looked like a little bit of a looked like the Packers defender really kind of initiated the contact on that overall, felt kind of ticky tack on that, but they could have made it easier on themselves in the second half of this game had they converted more third downs.
Yeah, to be again 4-13 on third down, they did convert their one fourth down attempt. That was the tush push right on fourth down. I believe that they got there early in that game. That's disappointing. When you went for 205, you would expect to be able to be more successful on third down, to put yourself in some shorter yardage situations, and to see the success that Green Bay had that Pittsburgh did not have. That was unusual for how well Pittsburgh ran the football.
Let's see. They had in the second half a 3rd and 17. That was a completed pass to Connor. That was well short of the chains. They had a 3rd and 3 on an incompletion to Jaylen Warren. They had a 3rd and 10 that was incomplete. They had a 3rd and 2, which that was the one I believe that Kenny Pickett rolled out on and got thrown away at the last second there. The 3rd and 6 was the Pickett scramble that he picked it up. The 3rd and 9 was the one completed to Pickens, but called back on offensive pass interference. Mm-hmm. And then the final one was just a give up run on 3rd and 19 with 1:52 left in the game.
So they were in 3rd and long consistently. And the run game did kind of shrink in that middle portion, the second, third quarter especially. The run game was not nearly as effective. I'll have to see what Green Bay was doing to maybe combat that. I don't have a great feel for that off the top of my head. But again, to run for 205, to be in those 3rd and longs, you can't have that continue.
Right, exactly. And you're going to have to start throwing the ball around the yard a little bit better, too. I mean, this is you have to go back to Ben Roethlisberger's final home game in 2000 and what season was it? 21.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Browns, to find the last time the team won a game with so few net passing yards there. So here's the key element to these things, be able to run the football with some sense of success. Don't turn the football over at all.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the defense statistically not playing great when it comes to the overall yardage thing, they're getting these takeaways still, and they're getting them at timely times on top of it. And this team has 18 total takeaways on the season. 6 of them, Alex, have come inside the red zone, and 2 of them yesterday. And boy, were those things key to, as Mike Tomlin says, engineering victory.
Your last 3 takeaways have all been in the end zone, correct? You had the Quan pick to beat Tennessee. That was at the goal line. You had the Peterson tip to Neal, which was in the end zone, and Casey, which was very similar to Quan, at the goal line. So, yeah, I mean, not only red zone, but like in the end zone type of plays. I imagine those 6 takeaways in the red zone leads the NFL. I can't imagine there's another team that has more than Pittsburgh right now.
I didn't look, but I would imagine it's hard. Yeah. That'd be hard to top.
Yeah. So to answer the question, how is this team 6-3, which is a question that I think many in the national media and probably some Steeler fans are asking. As you just said, Dave, they are tied first in the NFL with 18 takeaways, 6 of those in the red zone, which we can probably safely bet leads the NFL, and they are plus 10 in turnover differential, turnover ratio. That's also tied first in the NFL with the Bengals. And so when you take care of the football, you take the football away at a high rate, you tend to win those games.
Right, right. Now, what about the passing game?
Not much there. And it was disappointing because I really thought that, okay, Pickens and or Johnson's going to have a big game. Alexander, their top corners out. That secondary was not that talented overall. They've had some injuries there, some young guys trying to battle for playing time. And I thought, okay, Pickens and Johnson can really take advantage. And it just did not happen. And I mean, again, the passing game was not really asked to do much, and they were put in some third and long type situations, which is not, you know, helpful, obviously, but just really getting almost nothing from the passing game, Dave.
Yeah, nothing to the middle of the field, nothing really down the field, so to speak. Man, you look at the passing chart for Pickett, you look at the route target chart for Pickens in this one, and you just hope that they can somehow start figuring this thing out when it comes to being able to throw the football a little bit. You know, not only higher completion rate, but you know, down the field, and you know, did they have any passing explosive plays in this one?
I don't think so. Pickens would have been one. Let's see what the longest.
Pickens had one. That was that lower back shoulder. Yeah. Right.
Okay. 28, but that was the only one I believe in this game.
Right. And then they had a couple of, run explosive plays. A good thing they had those in this one. They had three total explosive plays. Two of them were runs, and one of them was the one on the right side, to Pickens, and, zero explosive plays in the first half.
Yeah, just, again, disappointing considering the opponent felt like you could take advantage and make some plays. I mean, you know, Kenny Pickett overall took care of the football, and that's paramount. Almost had that one interception that was initially ruled a pick, but then overturned the corner, only got his 1 foot down. Just felt like Pickett was on his first read, kind of locked in, which I saw early in the season, really wasn't going through his progressions, and that probably led to some issues and really made him a sideline type of thrower. I know the lack of targets to the middle of the field is concerning. I just don't know how many weapons you're targeting middle of the field. Robinson and Austin, those guys aren't providing much. The tight ends, you know, have really not been super involved in this offense, obviously. So I can understand that to some degree your top weapons are to the outside, but are there ways to scheme this thing up so you're at least providing some sort of threat to the middle of the field? I think it's a valid, you know, critique and concern.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see once the all 22 drops today, see if there were any maybe potential, you know, digs or you know, anything like. Now, he did obviously hit Pickens in that one late in the game, and had that one stood, I mean, we really would be talking about that being a key point to seal victory in that game. But you know, that one was called back. But man, we talk about this every week, especially when it comes to the middle of the field kind of stuff. And you just wish that this team would be able to push the football down the field a little bit more in the passing game. How many, there was the one kind of deeper down the right side to Deontay Johnson that he probably should have had, there go off his hands. I'm interested to look at another view of that to see how much. I mean, it did hit his hands. I don't know how you know if that's going to be credited for a pass defense or not on that one by the defender on that play there. But you know, that's obviously one that you wish you would have had that was thrown down the field a little ways there. But here's the good news: is you're 6-3 and you're still trying to figure this out. You still got half a season to go to try to start getting some semblance of a passing game. I think one of the things that's a little bit concerning overall outside of the passing charts and all like that is there were a handful of interceptable balls on this in this game, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was one along the left side and one that Nixon, you know, again, initially ruled a pick that was not an interception, but you had that lateral that they ruled incomplete, which I think Pittsburgh caught a break on that one. It's a close call, but it certainly could have gone the Packers' way. So that would have been a turnover, although not technically an interception. So Pittsburgh certainly, you know, is fortunate Green Bay to not take advantage of some chances that they had.
Right. What do you think about that? I mean, to me, it looked in real time and really the replays, it looked like that was a lateral, but Gene Steratore had a pretty lengthy Twitter post on it. I bet it'll be on DVE talking about that either today or tomorrow about it. But was it conclusive enough?
Yeah, it's probably one of those things where whatever the call on the field is what the call remains as. There was some other question, too, about when was that play blown dead? Was it after the Packers showed a clear recovery and those type of elements? I don't know, you know, what the consideration would have been there. It became moot once the pass was, you know, ruled to be in the play standing as incomplete. So I don't know. It did look like a lateral to me, though. That was my impression of it. So I was pretty nervous about the outcome of that play. And I think Pittsburgh caught a break there.
Yeah, but in the same breath, you could say the Packers caught a break on that OPI, maybe. I don't know. I'm sure even their head coach said after the game, he thought, you know, for sure that was a fumble on that play, you know, a backwards pass on that one there. So look, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And they've obviously got a couple of breaks there and got one, I think, on that backwards pass.
Just to go back to the passing game overall, again, not that I'm placing sole blame on the players, but I think over the last four games, Allen Robinson has two receptions and Calvin Austin has three or four, and they've all been short, you know, underneath type of stuff. So, you know, now Deontay Johnson, George Pickens did not have big productive days yesterday, but you just kind of look at, okay, what's your passing game made up of, and your, you know, number three slot receivers are providing essentially no production in the passing game. It's a lot of empty routes that are being run out there, Dave.
Boy, it sure will be nice to get Freiermuth back, won't it?
Assuming they throw to him a bit more than they had been. I mean, eight receptions in his first, you know, three and a half games. So I imagine he, you know, will get more involved. Some Connor kind of get more involved, although some of that's been third forever kind of check down type stuff. But yeah, it certainly will be welcoming to get Pat Freiermuth back.
And what was the other point I was going to make in this about the passing game? I lost my train of thought there, but they're going to have, you know, I know I was going to say, you know, obviously the narrative continues right now about, you know, they can't keep this up with, you know, the way they're going and win a game in the playoffs and all like that. Okay. It's hard to argue with that, but on the flip side, you've got to get to the playoffs to mm-hmm. not be able to do that in the playoffs. Right. So, the good thing here, and Mike Tomlin would probably reiterate here, is you're winning while you're still trying to figure this thing out right now.
Yeah, I mean, that is obviously the positive. You'd rather, you know, have to deal with all that kind of conversation in winning than losing. And as you said, you got to buy the lottery ticket to get in the playoffs and see what happens from there. And again, Pittsburgh overall, from a statistical standpoint, they are protecting the football. Kenny Pickett, no interceptions in five straight games. That is now the only fourth quarterback in Steelers history to ever do that. Minimum 15 attempts over that stretch. And so he could actually tie the Steelers record for six straight games without a pick if he does so against the Browns, which will be a tough task to do. But that's set by Bubby Brister, had a six-game interception-less streak back in whenever that was. And so we'll see if Pickett's able to match that. And Pickett only sacked one time over the last two games. So avoiding that negativity, avoiding the big negativity of the turnovers right now with a healthy run game, it's enough to win.
Yep. And you obviously, once again, you get into these winter months and look, you're going to face a very good Browns defense this week. Right. And you're going to have to be able to run the ball to control things and hope your passing game gets a little bit better here. But I mean, it's no secret really of how this team is winning. And it starts with not turning the football over and then getting some semblance of a run game and, you know, having your defense keep the opposition out of the end zone as much as possible and getting those key turnovers. And I mean, it certainly didn't feel like that, like they gave up was two field goals in that second half. Right.
Right. For sure. For sure. So yeah, it's never great when your starting quarterback has as many touchdown passes as number of wins that you have as a team. Pickett with six, his team with six. But again, that goes to the long-term concerns about, you know, high floor, low ceiling type team. Can they win the playoffs? Can they beat a Bengals team? They're going to face the Bengals twice this year. And that's a team that can put up points in bunches. And can you hang with them? Those are going to be, I think, great litmus tests for where this team is at. And of course, as you said, the Browns defense, how, you know, strong they are. Pittsburgh will certainly have their hands full of tougher tasks than what they faced against the Titans and the Packers. So all things to talk about later in the week, but, you know, right now, just happy to talk about a win for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I tell you what was what felt pretty surprising was them getting a field goal out of that one drive where it was really pretty much the back shoulder pass to Pickens, you know, and then you know a couple of runs later and you're in field goal territory there. Which drive was that? trying to pick it up here on the play-by-play here. But, I mean, credit to Anthony McFarland because he had a nice return. Mm-hmm. Oh, here it is. It was right after the Packers field goal with 3:07 left, I think, in the third quarter. You got a nice return by McFarland for 37 yards. The first play after that was the Pickens back shoulder down the right sideline for 28 yards. Then you had Jaylen Warren up the middle for just 2 yards, Warren for 5 yards, and incomplete on third down. But that, you know, the special teams, you could say, played a role. Boy, can you say the special teams played a role in this one here, because you had an incomplete on third and three at the Packers 31. And even though it didn't feel like you did much overall on offense on that drive, well, heck, I mean, you only had, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 plays, I think, overall, and you get a 49-yard field goal from Boswell, and you needed all those points in this game. And then you had the Patrick Peterson blocked extra point in this game. That ended up being huge overall in this one. And then, obviously, Boswell with you know, what did Mike Tomlin say after the game? Automatic, you know, when it comes to him. So special teams on one side of the ball, or, you know, in one aspect, did their part, but in another aspect, and this ended up being one of my 5 keys to the game, Alex, and it probably surprised some people with Nixon, but, you know, he entered this game as technically, I think, the top kick returner in the NFL, and, you know, the Steelers haven't been great top to bottom when it comes to covering these kickoffs here. I was a little bit worried about them covering these kickoffs in this game, and with good reason, because Nixon gave them some good field position with a couple of their kickoff returns in this game. So, but, you know, the Steelers on special teams did enough on the other side to help counteract that.
Almost ran one back, took one to Steelers territory, and the strategy seemed a bit strange to me. I know you can debate this one, but deliberately Pittsburgh was allowing returns. They were kicking short. They appeared to be trying to maximize hang time. It's not like wind was an issue or Boswell was incapable of driving the ball to the end zone. I guess the calculation was, listen, we know that Nixon's a great return man. He's aggressive. Dave, we talked about that on Friday's show. He's going to return some of these out that are 8 yards deep in the end zone. So instead of doing that, let's try to maximize hang time, allow our coverage team to get down there and you know, make those kind of stops. And they didn't tackle well, and there's some execution type stuff, but I don't know. I just don't love kicking it short on a great return, man. I get the intent of what Pittsburgh was trying to do. I just think it's just not a great strategy when you're facing a pretty strong guy like Nixon.
Man, you're running out of weeks to probably, because of the weather, to try to kick this ball out of the back of the end zone, right? So, against a team that has one of the top kick returners, I would have been more apt to just boot it out of the back of the end zone if he could.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the question is, can you get quite that far, or do you get 7 yards deep? But I still would rather make him return it from 8 yards, 7 yards deep, and then hopefully get one good stop at, say, the Packers 23-yard line, and you get that special teams coach for Green Bay, Rich Bisaccia, to tell Nixon, hey, man, you got to stop returning these because we're hurting field position here. So if you can kind of just get that one stop early, you can set the tone to let Nixon eat the ball the rest of the way. Instead, he's getting these, you know, he's returning at their 7, at their, you know, in the field of play. And, you know, he's capable of really doing some damage there. So didn't love the strategy there. But overall, as you said, they special teams. Yeah, the Boz, excellent from a field goal perspective. Harvard had some good punts. And shout out to Christian Kuntz for playing through the knee or the ankle, whatever it was. That dude's probably really hurting today. I don't even know if this dude's going to play on Sunday against the Browns. I mean, who knows what the situation there is for Christian Kuntz, but there really was no other option but for Kuntz to gut this one out and finish out as a team snapper.
At the very least, it won't be surprising if they bring someone in on the practice squad this week.
Yeah, I think they're going to have some tryouts at least to see some options there, because even you never want to be on your backup long snapper, obviously, but the backup long snapper was Cole Holcomb, who's now out for the season. So you were on the backup to the backup, the third string long snapper, which I have no idea who that is. Was that TJ Watt?
Yeah, I think it's TJ Watt.
Right. I think Derek was the guy last year, right? I think in some respect, I forget what the situation was last year. So all that is to say that Kuntz had to be the guy to finish that one out. He did. He snapped well, so credit to him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, what else about offense do we need to talk about here?
That probably covers it pretty well, I think. Just Broderick Jones really looking natural at right tackle, which surprises me for the lack of experience there. But maybe the lack of experience is almost a good thing for him, where he's not like ingrained at a left tackle, not a 40-game starter where those habits are really cemented in stone. So I don't know. He's a great athlete. Obviously, he's a pretty quick learner, smart guy, so that helps as well. But maybe actually the lack of experience at left tackle is helping him make that transition to right tackle.
Boy, you can see the athleticism. That's something we talked about in that last start as well, too, the ability to get to the second. Wait till this guy starts finishing blocks. Because he could afford to finish a few more blocks, right?
I'll have to check the tape. I'm sure probably to some extent. But yeah, if that's the worst thing he's doing, then we're pretty happy about the results.
Right. I mean, he had a couple of nice turnouts in this, especially early, man. Like I said, that right side of that offensive line with James Daniels, I really thought had a great opening quarter on into the second quarter there. And as I mentioned, I thought Sayamalo did what he needed to do, especially on some of those pulls. Yes, you saw Cole a couple of times get to the second level and do what he needed to do. I mean, look, the proof is in the pudding. Once again, you run the football for 200 something yards and you have these backs not getting first contact until, you know, 2 or 3 yards past the line of scrimmage. That means the offensive line did their job. Pass protection, probably a couple of Dan Moore getting walked back a couple of times. I think, you know, it obviously wasn't perfect, but, you know, Kenny Pickett only sacked, I think, what would you say, one time in this game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was some additional pressure. He had to scramble, but again, just the one sack is the ultimate figure on the box score. I assume tight end blocking was better. I imagine Washington probably did his part, and I thought Dan Moore on some of those toss plays were able to, you know, provide some blocks in space. So did you love the toss plays on third and short? It's one of those where if it worked, you say, hey, great call, candidate. If it doesn't work, you say, why are you running a toss on third and two? But they were pretty aggressive with it, but they worked out in the Steelers' favor.
Look, they mixed the run game up really, really good with the calls. I really thought. I thought we saw all aspects of the running game in this one. I mean, and they had a couple RPOs early and all like that. So I thought they mixed up the run game overall where it wasn't very predictable as far as what kind of run you would see.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if they ran like crunch and stuff. How much did they pull the guards in this game, Dave, do you think? I know Jones pulled some early on those dart schemes. Did the guards pull a lot, do you think?
Well, I know Jalen ran into the butt of Sayamalo on one of them, didn't he?
Yeah. On the touchdown, they pulled on the touchdown that Warren had, I think, right? That was Sayamalo coming around. So that was one example. Yeah. You know, I was listening to the football and live stream with Merrill Hodge after the fact, but you heard, you know, Hodge talk about it, and we talked about this. You know, the first month of the season, where were the pulling guards? Where were the guys on the move? And Pittsburgh's gotten back to a power gap scheme run game, and it's paid dividends. They still had some zone, and the zone schemes have been better. The whole run game, of course, has been better. But what is Pittsburgh's bread and butter for the last 50 years with the run game? It is the power run game. It is pulling those guards. That has been the staple from Mullins to Fanica to DeCastro, et cetera. Pittsburgh has always had the guys to do it this year with Sayamalu and Daniels, and they're finally doing it, and you're seeing a lot of success.
Yeah, keep it up.
Last stop for the offense and for the running game, Najee Harris's hurdles. I know Ben got on him about that on his podcast or his live stream there. I know it's something he does. He's done his whole career. Sometimes, though, they do seem a little excessive, Dave.
I just worry about him getting hurt up in there more than anything. Look, if the thing that we have to knock on Najee Harris or any running back in this game is a hurdle attempt, you know, that's way down the list of concern, I think, when it comes to, I understand Ben's point. I agree on that play in particular, that it cost him a couple yards and a first down on that one. I just, every time he does it, I just worry about how he's going to come down from it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some hard falls for sure, but you did have the one where, you know, it's what, first and 10. And if he puts his shoulder down, they're going to convert. And instead they move the ball back at second and two. You do have to play to your size. There was the one in open grass where Harris hurdled and it was no one there even really hurdled. He's just kind of jumping next to the Packers DB. And so it's an instinct thing. I know it's not like something he's planning and it's just kind of what you're doing in the moment, but you know, maybe have a bit of a conversation about, I'm not opposed to him hurdling ever, but just be more selective about when it's a good time to hurdle and when it's a good time to put your shoulder down and run.
Well, it's not like he doesn't have a long history of doing it. going, right. All, going all the way back to high school.
He did it in high school too?
Is Yeah.
So I know it's, you know, very much part of his game, and kudos to him. If he can jump like that at his size, I mean, I'd be doing it too. But
Connor likes to do those lately as well too. Connor's become a little bit of a hurdler.
Yeah, the meatball in the air on that one. But anyway, yeah, again, 205. As you said, the worst thing about Harris is the hurdles, and you run for 205, I'll take that every day of the week there, Dave.
All right.
Flipping over to the defense, and I don't really know how to react to the defensive performance here, Dave. As you said, the takeaways late, fourth quarter interceptions, end zone, you know, interceptions, critical moments of the game. That's all, you know, great. But I just thought this defense. And again, they only allowed 19 points, so it's hard to be mad about that overall. But I feel like this defense could have and should have done more in this game.
Man, 8 explosive plays they gave up in this one. One on a 40-yarder on the ground, which was a nice double pull by the Packers on that. I mean, sometimes they're going to, you know, occasionally these things are going to split open like a ripe melon, right? And it did perfectly on that one. But the other stuff in between in the passing game, that was a bit concerning. One of those on to Musgrave right down the middle of the field. Was that a cover two with Riley trying to carry?
I'll have to check the field 22, but I believe it looked like cover two, yes.
And you would think of all guys to have in there to be able to run with somebody down the middle of the field, you'd think he'd be able to run with him, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know if he kind of guessed on the route or if maybe Musgrave gave him a shake. I mean, Riley's not played a lot of football this year defensively, so maybe there's some rust. I'll have to check the all-22 on that.
What happened on the Reed touchdown, Alex? Miscommunication?
That was the 35-yarder on right. 3rd and 16, right? Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they're set up trips to all one side. You got Wallace over in the slot. Pittsburgh doesn't typically do that with their corners, so it's not a situation Pittsburgh's been in a lot. I don't know if it was miscommunication. I'm gonna have to check the tape. You know,
there were two running with him at the end, though, right?
Yeah, Neal has to help there. I mean, Wallace kind of has outside leverage. Neal's to the inside. He's got to be able to provide help. I just think Pittsburgh doesn't have the athletes to cover and run in space. I think that's the big issue. My big takeaway from this game, especially with Minkah Fitzpatrick out, Porter can run obviously, but it's Wallace, it's Neal, it's Casey, etc. The linebackers, when you're hurting guys, in communication issues on top of that. So my concern was, I said this Friday, was the Packers have athletes at receiver, at tight end. They can run, and Pittsburgh cannot really run that well. And so I think it limited the play calls for Pittsburgh, especially late, and they really could not man up on these guys because it did not work.
Yeah, and on the first touchdown to Romeo Dubs on a corner, he, you know, just Levi Wallace late getting with him on that.
I think there might have been miscommunication there because it was a late adjustment Pittsburgh made, and I'll have to check the tape. And I think maybe there was some slight miscommunication or just trying to communicate things right at the snap that slowed Pittsburgh down. And Pittsburgh cannot afford to be any slower on defense right now.
Right. I mean, look, it wasn't just one guy killing them on the explosive play, as you noted. I mean, Reed, Musgrave, Reed had two explosive plays in this. What'd you think on that late one there? Was that just having to be in coverage too long? Kind of that weird throw by Love? Was that just another situation of just the guy beating you to the ball?
That one looked really strange because it felt like Love was just throwing that up in the air like a jump ball, and that receiver, there's no one within 10 yards. Is that Wicks that caught that ball? I think it was it was Reed or Wicks. Casey should have been over there. He was kind of floating towards the middle of the field, going left to right. And I don't think he ever found the football. I mean, he's got to be over there to make that play. Somebody's got to make it a play there. But I think Casey just kind of lost where the ball was at and saw it way too late.
Well, I mean, this has been a bugaboo for this defense all season with the explosive plays, right?
Yeah, I said that consistently that the Steelers defense throughout the season has not been great. They've been a splash defense in that they have created a ton of splash. Again, 18 takeaways leading or tied for the NFL lead, and they've allowed a lot of splash. I believe they now have the most plays of 20-plus yards allowed on the season. I can double-check that as we talk about it right now. So they are a splash play team in terms of that they create the big play and they allow the big play at basically the same rate.
And then giving up a couple of these on 3rd and long situations too, that hurts. They gave up a 3rd and 7 one. That was the one to Musgrave up the gut. They gave up a 3rd and 16 on the touchdown to Love to Reed, and then a 3rd and 10 to Wicks for 32 yards. in a key situation in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, their first two touchdowns were on third down, third and seven to Dubs for the touchdown, and then third and 16, the 35-yarder to Reed. So not only are you allowing conversions, you're allowing touchdowns off of conversions on third and long. I mean, I don't know how many third and longs the Packers committed in this one, but I think you just kind of rattled them off, a bunch of them. And that just, you know, it's not just the fact that you're allowing the conversion, but you're allowing the ball to go in the end zone. That just makes it 10 times worse.
Yeah, normally you don't come out of giving up eight explosive plays if you're not matching them. This team just keeps ignoring the top.
What was the talk stat in this one?
It was eight to five, because they had okay. I put 8-4 on Twitter, but I forgot the final interception of the game. So the Steelers had three explosive plays, two takeaways for five on their ledger, and the Packers had eight explosive plays. So another minus three in the talks, yet coming away with a win.
And they were minus three against Tennessee, I believe. They were negative, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it was three.
Yes. So I would love to know what the record of teams that are minus three in the talk stat are. It has to be a pretty low winning percentage.
Yeah, I can't imagine over the last 5 years, it's very high.
Yeah, and yet Pittsburgh, the last two games have been wins. Now, again, it's been against the Titans and the Packers, not exactly Super Bowl contenders, but still, this talk stats are the talk stats regardless of the opponent, and it's pretty remarkable for Pittsburgh. But yeah, I just looked up the numbers here. Pittsburgh has allowed 47 plays of 20-plus yards this year. That's pass or rush. That is worst in the NFL. So that is not the place you want to be, but they make up for it with their big plays, with the takeaways, the strip sack fumbles, the interceptions, fumble recoveries, et cetera.
Yeah, look, six of them in the six of the 18 in the red zone. And Patrick Peterson, boy, he played that one good. On it looked like double out and ups on that play, trying to conflict. Who was it? Neil, was it on that one?
Probably.
He ended up with the interception right on that one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Peterson read it and kind of pinned him, knew he didn't have much room to work with on the sideline, and just mirrored him on the up and got his head around right away. And just, you know, it's almost like he knew he was going to do that, especially his reaction afterwards, because it's hard. The way he was running away from the football, it's hard that he got a good look at the actual interception, but he knew it happened the way he posed in front of the camera. I
probably heard the crowd when the crowd's going crazy. I mean, yeah, I think he said after the game that he knew somebody was in the air. He didn't know what teammate it was, but knew there was a safety over there that hopefully he could just bat the ball to. That was a veteran savvy play. I've been pretty critical of Patrick Peterson this year, I think understandably and justifiably so, but I thought he had a great game. I mean, he did not allow those big plays. He made big plays. The block extra point, as you said, that is what a huge play that was, Dave. So to make that a 4-point game.
He came a long way on that, too. He's so long, though, you know?
Yeah, and he times it. And do you think maybe playing with Minnesota helped him a little bit in terms of seeing the Packers, kind of knowing their operation a little bit? I don't know. It couldn't have hurt there. But yeah, to make that a 4-point game throughout, because if it's a 3-point game, the way the Packers attack this thing is totally different, not having to put the ball in the end zone. That might be the play of the game there, Dave, because that really changed the entire course and changed how the Packers attacked things.
Yeah, I don't know if you call that a turning point or not, but it sure made a difference late in the game, obviously, because they needed the touchdown at the end.
Yeah, and again, he's playing slot corner. He's playing now safety in dime packages, so he's moving around wearing hats. Again, there's still, you know, I don't think it's been a great year overall for Pat Pete, but I thought he played his best football, and you saw at least why this team signed him, for the results in the Packers game.
All right, the run defense, they gave up 116 yards on the ground, but 40 of those came on one run. Now, you obviously can't sit here and cherry pick these things, but we're going to do it anyway. What's the, let's see, they had 24 total runs in this game. Take the 116 and subtract 40 from it. That gives you 76 divided by one less run, which is, what did I say? What the hell? 24. So
23.
So divided by 23, what is that?
3.3.
All right. Not awful, for sure.
Yeah, I was happy with the run defense.
Yeah, I thought Keanu Benton did a good job getting off some blocks in this guy. I thought Loudermilk one time got off a nice block and made a play. So overall, the run defense, other than that 40-yard bust, split that they had on the pulling to that side there, thought the run defense held its own pretty good.
Yeah, they rallied. They tackled well.
Atlanta Roberts, boy, I worry about that guy's health the way he comes down attacking the run.
All gas, no brakes type of dude. And Mark Robb is very similarly built in terms of that mindset. So I think run defense can still hold up, even though you've lost Holcomb and Alexander. Those guys can maybe be a little over-aggressive and prone to play fakes and misdirection because they are so just attack. But if you're running power, you're running pullers, Roberts is going to be the first man there to meet you. So, Hayward coming back, obviously, is a big help as well. Benton's playing great football. You know, even whenever Adams gets healthy, even if he's good for the Browns game, Benton has to start a nose tackle. Yeah. I know I've kind of downplayed that a little bit throughout the season. I think Adams has played well, but Benton is just kicking butt and taking names. So he's the guy going forward.
Yeah, like I put on Twitter in the middle of the night there, wait till this guy makes his second year jump.
It's scary, man. Yeah, I mean, this dude's playing just tremendous football right now. But I think maybe limiting his snap count early in the season takes a little off his plate, allows him to really kind of refine his technique, make some mistakes and learn from them. So I'm okay with the way they've kind of eased him into this. Obviously, he's playing more because of Adams' injury. But I imagine that, Benton's going to be the dude the rest of the way.
And runs after the football real well. And that's, we've talked about that a couple of times now.
You talk about plays you shouldn't forget. How about the open field tackle he had on that screen? It was Roberts did a good job to disrupt it, but then Benton hustling. If he doesn't make that play, that's probably a touchdown for Aaron Jones. I don't know exactly what's behind that, but there's a couple of blockers. There's only, I think, Patrick Peterson over there. I'm betting $1 that's a touchdown for the Packers. I think they kicked the field goal because of that drive. So Benton made a huge play in space on that screen pass.
Yeah, just you can definitely pick him out running after the football, which is obviously a good trait to have and something John Mitchell for years when he was with the team stressed.
Yeah, required to have. If you're going to be a D lineman in Pittsburgh, you better run to the football. One thing we didn't see much of in this game, to me, Dave, is one of the biggest disappointments, a lack of a pass rush. Jordan Love, 40 dropbacks. There were 40 pass attempts. I think he had 42 dropbacks in total. Only sacked once, only hit five times, and I really feel like that pass rush was not there. But honestly, we talked about this last night, Dave, you and I, in our group chat. They did not rotate these guys. Mm-hmm. T.J. Watt played 97% of the snaps. Highsmith, 93% of the snaps. Not sure what that rationale is, but I think those guys were just gassed the entire game.
Yeah, I would be curious to hear Mike Tomlin and Terrell Austin address that this week. I mean, Mark, I can understand Herbig not getting a lot of snaps overall in the game, but Marcus Golden only played five and Herbig only played two. Mm. And, it's not like you came into this game and said, look, they can obviously run the football. You knew they were going to try to run the football, but it wasn't thought of, in my opinion, is that daunting of a run attack overall heading into this one, not kind of what they've seen in a few other of these games. And on top of is you got back-to-back divisional games coming up, mm-hmm. I just don't understand the heavy burn on Watt and Highsmith.
Yeah, I mean, obviously those guys are going to play the vast majority of snaps, but I think Pittsburgh utilized a healthier rotation, and Green Bay did have a couple of three and outs, but they had a couple of long drives too, where you really didn't get a rotation there and needed that for those guys. And, they ran some hurry up and late in the game, of course, they were doing that. So that does make it, tough to sub, but I don't know. I just felt like, for Golden to play five snaps, Herbig two, it just didn't make a lot of sense. And the pass rush, I think, struggled because they just did not let these guys sub and rotate a little bit.
Yeah. And that was kind of felt early in the game too. So obviously Watt, had his sack. And I thought, Armon Watts had a nice pass rush where he trucked somebody in this, maybe that was the Watt sack as well too. When that happened there, but, just overall, they weren't getting good pressure on Love.
Yeah. Hayward, I don't want to say it was necessarily a bad game. He did have one good bull rush, and the run defense is probably good, but maybe he's still trying to get his legs and work his way back. He was getting rotated out pretty heavily in this game. Yeah, I think Watts, that was a set on the left tackle. Is that the one you're talking about when he ran that dude over? I think it might have been a separate play, but yeah, that was a really good rush from him. How about DeMarvin Leal? Four snaps for DeMarvin Leal. Mm. That one surprised me, Dave.
There was somebody that looked like they twisted an ankle at some, maybe it was in the second half.
I know Benton was hobbly a little bit late.
Yeah, maybe it was Benton on one of those. I couldn't pick up the number on him when going through the TV tape last night. Interested to see the all 22 end zone, see if I could pick up who that was. But it looked like I didn't know who it was. I didn't know if maybe that was Leal or not, but it looked like somebody stepped wrong or something.
I should have mentioned with the injuries, too, some of the other injuries in this game, less serious than Alexander, but Keanu Neal with a rib injury after the interception. He told reporters he's going to get an MRI, but I think he's going to be okay, speaking to the media after the game. I think Deontay Johnson had a thumb. Benton was a little hobbly. I think Hayward limped off late. Kuntz, obviously, but we'll see what Tomlin has to say Tuesday. Can I just go back to the inside linebacker comment in discussion quickly? Can I give you a really stupid suggestion, Dave, that should kind of get yelled at, but I'm gonna put it out here on the safety of the podcast where I don't see the tweets of the hate as much. What about in just very kind of specialty situations, not talking about, you know, dime packages or every down, could DeMarvin Leal play some off-ball linebacker? He's a good athlete. They had a rush package for him last year against Buffalo, three snaps as an off-ball linebacker. As he was kind of looping and blitzing, could you do something there occasionally? I wouldn't rule it out. If you're only going to play this dude four snaps at defensive line as kind of a base package only type of guy, I don't think it's a terrible thought.
I understand where you're coming from. How often are you going to do that? What situations?
I'm still working on that. I just had the thought of like, okay, this guy's not playing much. He has struggled as a pass rusher. I think he's not played in sub packages because they don't trust him because he's not refined his game, but can you do something to get him on the field and utilize his athleticism? This guy can run.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see that. No,
probably not. Probably not. But I don't know. Do you think, I know last week Austin said, well, no, Nick Herbig inside, no way. He's an outside guy. He said, I think Austin kind of jinxed. He said, if we lose three inside linebackers, you know, hopefully we don't do that. And they're dropping like flies over here. Do you kind of revisit the Herbig discussion, especially this dude's going to play two snaps defensively?
I would view that more as a likely than Leal. But even so, it sounded really definitive. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, look, extreme situations call for extreme decisions sometimes, right?
Right. I mean, again, trying to make that mid-season switch for a rookie, pick up that portion of the playbook is asking a lot. So I'm not going to be mad at this team if they don't do that. But if you can kind of just get Herbig a package of plays on third downs, maybe you could try that. But there's a whole communication aspect. Who's going to be calling those plays?
Right.
And, you know, Herbig is not equipped to probably handle that. So I don't know. But that, you know, they may have to at least the question I'm sure will be asked again to Terrell Austin. I'll put it this way.
Look, you, as we said at the top of the show, you can stitch this thing with a lot of different situations, but also when you're dealing with so many moving parts like that, mm-hmm. try to stitch it up so many ways, you're setting yourself up for assignment errors, you know?
True.
I mean, you could, we talked about Neil. We talked about, obviously, a couple of those practice squad guys. And, you know, you throw out there Leal and Herbig. I mean, sure, you could situation this thing to death, probably. But, will people be playing fast in those situations, you know?
That's a great point. You're trying to balance between letting these guys play fast and risk or reduce the risk of communication issues while trying to piece this thing together, because you can't just have one guy handle the responsibilities of replacing a Quan or Holcomb or, you know, the dime package situation stuff. So it's a tough line to walk schematically. I know Pittsburgh was probably trying to simplify things defensively. They were playing a lot of zone coverage, trying to keep things simple. They weren't blitzing a ton, trying to keep things simple. But then is it too simple? Did, you know, quarterbacks start picking that apart? It's a tough line to walk, especially mid-game.
I'd much rather have linebackers that are used to playing the position there first and foremost. And look, I mean, you've had a couple of these guys around, you know, these younger guys on the team for a little while, you know, mm-hmm. So they should understand what's going on now. I do think the Neal aspect is going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of did that with Troy that year that Larry Foote got hurt in week one. I mean, they basically moved Troy to a dimebacker position. I think it was at 2013, whatever year that was.
Yeah, what was that, 12, 13? Yeah.
11, somewhere around there. They didn't, because that was whenever, like, they had Vince working run downs, and they had Troy kind of working pass downs. I forget the exact way they went about that, but I wonder if you could kind of see something similar with not that we're comparing Neil to Troy, but just in terms of the usage and how they try to solve those things.
I tell you, it's a nice week not to have to play Chubb, bless his heart.
Yeah, but that Browns team, they look good in the second half. Mm-hmm. Watson went, 14-14 in the second half? He's got an ankle, but I think he's going to play. They put up 33 on that Baltimore team. That's mm-hmm. a great Ravens defense, so, watch out.
Look, the key thing is they're getting timely takeaways on defense. That's the thing that's holding this thing together, because they're giving up a whole heck of a lot of yards. I just pulled something earlier this morning here. They are giving up, what is it here? Where is it? Nearly 380 yards of offense a game. The Steelers are. They've given up over 3,400 in total yards of offense on defense so far.
Yeah. It's
5.6 yards per play, I think.
Yeah. Do you have the adjusted net yards per pass, or whatever it is, adjusted net yards numbers for this team?
No, but I would imagine because of the takeaways, it's still under six.
Yeah, likely. I wonder where they are offensively. Not probably also under six. Not that you want to be there.
Oh yeah, they're way under that. I mean, they're under five, I think.
Yeah. So how many of those teams have made the playoffs? I wonder. Pittsburgh, maybe the exception.
It doesn't happen a lot. Yeah.
I wonder what the last team who did it was. I'm sure maybe Tampa last year, when they went 8-9 with that terrible offense. I don't know. Anyway, any other thoughts here defensively? I just worry about your inside linebacker. Can you cover, and just coverage in general? Do you have the kind of guys that can man up, can run? This team needs more athletes in the secondary.
Yeah. The biggest thing is the linebacker position moving forward, and just the rate of explosive plays that this defense has given up.
Yeah. All they have to do, Dave, all the Steelers defense has to do is not allow these big plays. Reduce them by half, and you're going to have a solid run defense that's improved with Hayward back. You're taking the football away. The pressure's waned a little bit, but I still think long-term, Watt, Highsmith, the pass rusher's going to get home. Just stop giving up the big plays, and your defense is going to be 10 times better, and you're going to have, arguably a really, really stout unit. That's the thing that's holding this defense back.
And find a way to get Watt and Highsmith off the field for a couple more plays.
Yeah, I mean, that's really usually a positional coach handles that. That's Denzel Martin. He's usually the guy that kind of helps rotate and gets guys in and out. Now, of course, Watt and Highsmith probably have to occasionally take themselves out, and you kind of have to make them take themselves out sometimes. So this was kind of a weird one-off, because they rotated decently this year, and Golden's played some, and they like their depth, and they had better depth than they've had in years. So I don't know what happened in this game, but it has to change going forward.
Could it? My only theory behind that is the longest drives that the Packers had in this game were coming out of halftime. 11 and 9 played drives back to back there. Was the thinking, because at that point, the Packers had run 25 plays in the first half, which is obviously not a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are you thinking, okay, well, halftime, get the orange slices and the Capri Suns. I'm sure it's a little bit more elaborate than that. But then you come out and you give up, I'm sure they're thinking, well, we don't have to take them off the field on these first two drives here. But then after that, it was 3, 6, 6, and 7. So was it the overall flow of the game and not having to be on the field longer past those first two? You know what I'm saying here? Did mm-hmm. the flow of the game really just dictate that you not have to rotate them out because of not giving up long drives? And then the feeling was on the first two drives of the second half was, well, they just came out of the locker room and they only played the 25 plays in the first half.
Yeah, potentially, but it's just, if you're in the middle of an 11-play drive, you can't ask a guy to play all 11 plays. Usually those guys sub out at some point, or occasionally Pittsburgh will maybe start the next drive with Golden and Herbig out there after a long drive to give the Watt and Highsmith extra rest. Those guys might come on 3 plays into the next drive, something like that. That's kind of been the way they rotated things. So, yeah, I mean, maybe there's some of that, and then you factor in some tempo, some no-huddle type stuff, and it was some situations where you're not close to your sideline, you're not comfortable subbing, and maybe.
And then obviously in the game, you're going to keep them out there.
Yeah, and they were obviously picking up the pace, and so you can't sub there. And they took some timeouts to try to give those guys some rest. So I don't know. I mean, it's just something, you know, to watch going forward.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear if Tomlin or Terrell Austin's asked about that at some point this coming week.
Any other thoughts here defensively, Dave?
Nope.
Anything on special teams? Kind of mentioned that. I think Harvin, Peterson, and just the kick coverage strategy was questionable to me.
Yep, I would agree. We covered a little bit of special teams and gave props and gave a spanking there, I think.
Yeah. All right, Dave. Anything else here to talk about coming out of this game? 6-3 AFC North, you know, very, very, you know, just razor thin margin right now. Baltimore half game up over Pittsburgh. You know, Browns come from behind win. The Bengals, they lose to the Texans. That certainly hurts their chances. But Pittsburgh right in this thing. It's going to come down to the AFC North. It's going to be week 18 against Baltimore. And they're both teams are going to be playing for something important. And so, check back with me on January 7th and we'll see where things are at, because this thing's gonna stay close the rest of the way.
Yeah, two big games obviously coming up, division, and then tell people about the Thursday night game against the Patriots.
Oh yeah, people were wondering, a very popular post on the site yesterday. No, the Patriots Steelers game cannot be flexed. NFL rules say that if you're going to flex it, you need 28 days of notice to flex a Thursday night game. Yesterday was 25 games out from that Thursday night game against the Pats. So, like it or not, Al Michaels will gripe about it, but you're going to see Mac Jones and Kenny Pickett on some Thursday night football.
Or Bailey Zappe.
I should say. I guess Jones is bad. You're going to see a Patriots quarterback and Kenny Pickett on Thursday night football. Yeah, good correction.
All right, let's roll through some emails here. Travis Pick says, why did the Steelers not have a play to run to the line and snap the ball? Green Bay just did it on the run in the fourth quarter. Time for some fourth quarter. He tweeted this in the middle of the game there. I don't know what he's talking about specifically. Why don't the Steelers not have a play to run to the line and snap the ball?
I'm not sure what that is referencing.
I think that was, he just had a moment that he had to ask about during the game there. Jeff Berg says, howdy on this Victory Monday. I'm so confused by the Steelers passing offense. It seems every team finds receiver open in between the hashes, and yet we just throw to the sidelines or in the flat to the running back. We just played a team with injuries in the secondary and yet really didn't take advantage of it. We're 6-3, and I can only imagine how good we could be if we were able to execute an NFL passing offense. That's just more of a comment there. We obviously talked about the passing game earlier in this show. Deshaun Campbell, sup guys, I listened to the podcast from last week. I want to know what makes Kenny better than Sam Howell. Howell leads the NFL in passing yards and has 17 TDs. It's just hard watching Kenny, because even with the improvements of play calling, O-line play, and running game, we've yet to see any improvement from Kenny at all. Okay, fair email there. I would just say this, you know, haven't sat there and watched Sam Howell play every snap, obviously. Second, you know, a lot of fourth quarter Kenny bias probably mixed in there to some degree. Howell is having a good season for what he's being asked to do.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that he leads the NFL in passing attempts. They play from behind a lot. They're asked to do a lot from a pass game perspective. So that lends itself to some larger numbers. I mean, the sacks have been a big issue, too. I said earlier, it's probably harder to evaluate Howell because he's getting crushed at the rate that he's getting hit. Let's see how the season ends for both those guys and talk about things once the season concludes.
Let's see here. Larissa, best and most honest Steelers coverage out there. I don't get if Kenny is not seeing open receivers or the receivers aren't getting open. Do you guys see what the issue is when you analyze the all 22? We don't have the all 22 yet for the game against Packers. Any moment now we'll have that. Larissa writes, it seems like he is just trying to throw away the ball as soon as possible without looking for open receivers. It did look like it was first read Kenny a lot in this game, though.
Yeah, I would just say, broadly speaking, I think Pickett has had a tendency to really focus on his first read and not get off of that read quickly enough when it's not there. But, you know, it's always a combination of things, you know, trying to have some more middle of the field type options, and weapons for him have been limited, and, you know, missed opportunities for Pickens and Johnson, et cetera. So it's not all just one thing. But yeah, I think Pickett has probably honed in on that first read a little too often.
Chase writes in, David Knox, how do we make this a functional offense? Why can Kenny Pickett make 30 to 40 yard throws, but cannot make 4 to 5 yard throws down the middle. Listen, the win was great, but in reality, we have played bad and average teams. We have zero innovation on or scheme. Absolutely none. I see bad quarterbacks make throws that Kenny Pickett can't. I don't understand his issue. If we do end up in the playoffs, we'll be one and done, and it'll be super depressing. What are your thoughts on the below statement? Other teams adapt to their players' strengths, and the Steelers make the players adapt to the coaches' strengths.
Well, I think what Pittsburgh has done and say, hey, we got to run the ball effectively. That's going to be the strength of this offense. That's kind of where they poured everything into because, you know, Pickett is only going to be able to offer so much and you can't put too much on that guy in his passing offense. So I would just say kind of look at the model. The Titans game was a really good model for Pickett to be in positions to succeed. I thought that was a really well-called game by Canada. And I think just overall, the run game has been the best friend that Pickett could have right now. Is even whenever he struggles in those games like yesterday, you're not asking him to do too much. You're allowing him to rely on the run game to kind of get you out of the game with a win. So hopefully that run game continues and that'll hopefully just, you know, be able to alleviate some of that pressure on Kenny Pickett.
Look, you got to get into playoffs before you can talk about losing in the playoffs, and they're stitching this thing together somehow. Now, once again, you know, especially some of these teams they've got upcoming here, you would hope that we see some progression in this passing game, especially middle of it, stuff. You know, you can't rely on explosive plays in a running game, and just week to week, they're just not, you know, and the yards after the catch haven't really been there, especially in this game against the Packers overall. You know, you got to start seeing some of that stuff, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, you need to see some progression. You need to see a statement game from Pickett, at least give you one where you feel really, really confident. Those have not happened, so not going to get any easier when you're facing the Browns on Sunday. That's going to be one heck of a challenge.
Be interesting to see how they use Pat Freiermuth when they get him back.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Ronald Hall, let's take one more here. Glad for the win despite the frustratingly conservative offensive play calling. Kenny's passing chart looked like a hot mess. Was it Canada's conservative play designs or play calling this week, or were there plays to be made specifically deeper in the middle of the field and that Kenny just didn't see it? In other words, is he not going through his progressions? Once again, we'll have to see. We'll be able to talk on this on Wednesday a little bit more in depth once we see the all 22 and see if there were some instances where he did miss. And once again, how big a play would that have been to George Pickens? You know, had that not been negated by a penalty. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just one, you know. But it's so hard to tell on the TV tape, and we'll get a lot better look on the all 22 on this. I mean, I thought overall, once again, I thought the play calling was pretty good, Alex. I thought they mixed up the runs pretty good in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get a great feel for how much I like the play calling. Obviously, the start of the games were great. The opening script, I thought, was really good in terms of mixing in the run game, the short pass game, play action, that deep ball, third down that drew PI on that for kind of a big explosive play via penalty. It didn't feel egregiously bad to me. I'll kind of have to watch. I just got to watch the tape on this offense and see kind of what went wrong, what went right, and go from there.
Ron also addresses, are you surprised by the decline in snaps for both Golden and Herbig in the past 3 or 4 weeks? Part of the reason TJ Highsmith aren't getting home might be because they're gassed. Yeah, we talked about it. I don't say it was as super noticeable the last, you know, several games, but I mean, it was very noticeable. I DM'd Alex last night, you know, got through three quarters of the game and said, because I knew Alex was charting at the time. I said, where do you have Golden and Herbig, or Golden specifically, when it came to snaps? And, you know, lo and behold, you know, those two barely saw the field. And as we address, right, it's going to be interesting to see if Mike Tomlin or Terrell Austin is asked about that this week.
Yeah, Golden snap counts from recent games, 13, 14, 14, 14, 11, this game 5. So yeah. The past have been fine, 15, 20%. That's solid. I'm good with that. 5, 7% of the snaps. Something went wrong there.
All right, Alex, we chewed up about an hour and 15 here and obviously got other chores to do related to the site. So I think it's time to call this one quits and you and I get back after on Wednesday.
All right, sounds good. Go through the tape and see what any conclusions are for Wednesday's show.
All right. Let's see. Until Wednesday, as always, you can follow me on Twitter /X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Cazorra. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right, navigation bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate or hit the ad-free button up right navigational bar. Until Wednesday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.